Likewise.
Nice to meet you.
You too. Although I'm sure you hear it all the time. It's like, I feel like I already know you because I've heard you talk a bunch.
But, yeah, yeah.
sure, that's a common line you get.
It is, but it's totally understandable. It's this, yeah. You know, these electronic technologies play with our minds. And
yeah.
So what do you want to do today? You want to talk about yourself or introduce yourself a little bit and then go where you want to go?
Sure. Yeah, I can. I'm pretty simple. I'm in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, okay. Ohio.
Yeah.
So I grew up here until I went off to college down in Tennessee. So kind of right in the middle of the Bible Belt. So I grew up Christian family, one of four kids, parents still together. It was a kind of a Pentecostal church. It was non-denominational, but it was kind of one of those, like, we're non-denominational, but really we're Pentecostal kind of thing. They're pretty closely tied, a lot of relationships with the, like, Assemblies of God church. So that's kind of the kind of environment I grew up in. And then I went to college, and I went to a Presbyterian college, but that wasn't, I mean, it was just kind of generic Christian college, really. They were associated with a Presbyterian church in Bristol, Tennessee, where I was. Met my wife down there. Got married down there, stayed a couple of years after college to be a math teacher, and was going to a Free Will Baptist church down there, and then moved back up here to Cincinnati 2012-ish, I think, and then kind of bounced around, and now I'm actually part of we just do like a house church. So we actually meet in my house, and there's three couples, and there's been more, but people have moved away and things like that. And so that kind of changes a little bit, but the same core three couples have been a part of it for the last few years. So that's kind of the general perspective on my background and where I come from. I have four kids, four girls, a six-year-old, twin five-year-olds, and a two-year-old. So they're all wow. very young, all girls, very close together. So it's kind of crazy.
How wonderful.
But it's great. So they're all at the doctor right now. My wife just got diagnosed with strep throat this morning. So don't know how you get that in the middle of this. And in
wow. the end of May. And you didn't cancel. Oh, wow. Brave guy.
Well, they're all gone. They're all out of the house. They're at the doctor. So my wife got diagnosed and she took the four of them. So they're going to test the four of them.
Yeah.
And get them on medicine just in case. That
comes. Yeah.
So that's kind of the world that I'm in. And so I, like everybody else, came across Jordan Peterson. I think it was a Bill C-16 thing. I actually, so you probably could imagine given, the, Assemblies of God and the Baptist, kind of perspective. I grew up very conservative, my family, loves to debate politics, and it's always, kind of the Republican side. And so that was kind of how I came into familiarity with Peterson, was all of the kind of conservative pundits that were, hey, here's this guy who's against this, transgender pronoun thing. And so he kind of got a lot of play there, but, I actually kind of, over time myself personally have moved away from a lot of those outlets and started kind of listening more to, his perspective, and then other people, that obviously opens the door to other things. And so somewhere along the way, I saw a video, actually I saw it multiple times, like a recommended video on YouTube, pastor responds, pastor reacts, one of those kind of things. And I've seen so many of those.
Yeah.
And I just, generally speaking, am not a fan. And I had just assumed, knowing the pastors that I've been around, and I've been around some really good ones and some not so good ones, like I'm sure most people have. And I was just ready for, here's all the reasons he's wrong, and here's all of the appropriate, biblical responses to things. And so, so when I heard yours, I was like, whoa, like that is way more like how I kind of view it, And that's partly how I, why I'm doing a house church. I can't find a home, yeah. in kind of the church world. I kind of pushed back against the whole mega church thing a long time ago. There was actually a church that was a church plant here in Cincinnati that kind of started the house church thing. Yep. And the church itself kind of collapsed, but the house church that we had within it has survived beyond that,
yep.
Which is pretty cool. So, So that's kind of where I am. And that's kind of how I, you know, came in contact with you and what you've been doing. So ever since then, I've just been kind of following, you know, your kind of ongoing stream of consciousness. And, you know, I saw you actually dropped another one this morning. I probably would go back. It was not enough time to watch it between
no.
dropped and when we started talking. So I was like, I'll go back after.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
Yeah.
But thank you. And yeah, you know, the house church thing is a really interesting movement that, you know, so when I came back to the States and then I came to Sacramento in 97, 99, one of our church plants was really thinking in terms of that house church movement thing. And it's an interesting, of course, in the Dominican Republic, a lot of the churches that I worked with were very small. I mean, they might be 5 to 10 people. So that's kind of a house church on U.S. scales, but they wouldn't meet in homes necessarily. So, but it was always interesting how you had the house churches and then they're trying to network them. And it's an interesting movement. And there's a lot that's to be said for it because, I mean, you've got a lot of, that was sort of at the end of the seeker boom. And the seekers were, of course, having the big meeting and then the small groups. That was kind of their strategy. And a lot of people are kind of like, well, the big meeting is kind of the big meeting, but the small group is all the seeker churches. Well, that's the life on life. That's really the formation and the discipleship happens. And so some people are like, what do you need this for? You know, get that on TV.
That's pretty much how I feel at this point, honestly. And that, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, if we were to kind of go through all of the details of kind of how I developed, you know, the kind of perspective that I did, you know, just some of the highlights. I was part of a Bible study. I mean, I said I went to a Christian college, so that wasn't all that uncommon. It was like six guys. It was a guy's Bible study, and we were going through like the men of the Old Testament together. And it just really changed my perspective on the idea of needing a, you know, kind of leader, master, knowledge holder that tells everybody, you know, kind of what to think versus us holding each other accountable, actively in community with one another. And we would meet once a week, but we were college guys living in the same dorm on a college campus. We saw each other all the time. You know, maybe we met on Wednesday night, but if I'm with you on Friday morning, I might say, hey, you know, that, you know, you were struggling with whatever it was the other night. How's that going? You know what I mean? I thought, well, this is the community.
Yeah.
You know, this is a totally different thing. Very different from how I had grown up to kind of perceive church. So that was a big part of me kind of pushing back against like, what are we doing? If this is where the most growth happens, then what's all this other stuff? You know? And then I was an RA in the dorms and my boss, the RD, he tried to get a little book club going with the RAs and nobody really liked it, but I think I'm probably the only one that actually read the book. It was called Organic Church. I don't remember who the author was. I mean, it's been over 10 years since I read it, but it was a really interesting book, but it was a very, you know, pro house church, you know, let it grow organically, kind of the anti-seeker sensitive kind of perspective. So then that started pushing me, you know, and then the church that we were involved in Bristol, in Tennessee, the Free Will Baptist Church was pretty small. I mean, there was maybe 100 people, you know, on a good Sunday. And so we were very involved in the community. You know, that became, I was away from home. I have no family down there. So, that became my family. My wife's family lives down there, but she's not super close with them. So these people were our family. It was very intergenerational. We're talking to, you know, the folks who sat behind us were like in their 70s, you know, and we're right out of college, just married. And every Sunday they're, you know, giving us hugs and kissing us on the cheek and talking to us like we're their grandkids. And we just thought that was fantastic, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was another kind of, for me, like, oh, church is family. This is not supposed to be, I'm not supposed to be an audience member. I'm supposed to be participating as a part of a community. Yeah. And so, you know, all of those things just kind of snowballed to where I am now, where it's like, okay, now I, you know, tried to find, you know, it's always, you know, you do it with everything, relationships and church and everything else, where you leave one and you try to find, oh, all the best parts about that. Where can I find that exact same thing? And it's like, well, that doesn't necessarily exist here. You know, I mean, maybe there's a church somewhere, but I don't know how, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that we just kind of stumbled into it. And so we've kind of started doing this thing with our house church, and that's been good, and everybody's appreciated it, and we're growing. And, you know, there's everybody kind of, it's interesting that the three, so it's basically three couples and the three ladies, my wife and the two other wives, they do like their own kind of women's Bible study one night a week, just the three of them. And the guys, we're not so good at communicating outside of the church. So, but we all do a lot of, you know, like I consume a lot of your content, Jordan Peterson, and and they all kind of have their go-to people. And then a lot of the times, you know, we meet at our house on Sunday nights, you know, and like the technical time is like 6:30 to whatever, 8 o'clock or something. And then inevitably people are lingering on our front porch till midnight because they're, hey, did you hear that? You know, and I've sent your videos to people, and, you know, they've sent me videos of, you know, whatever, something they saw on Unbelievable or somewhere, you know, and we're always discussing that kind of thing. So it's cool, you know, to be a part of, you know, a community in that way. But then there's also, you know, things that just that rattle around in my head forever that I talk to them about some, but not everybody is as ingrained in it the way that I kind of have let myself become ingrained in it. And so that's why I was like, well, I'm going to schedule time with Paul, 'cause I'm going to talk through some of this stuff with him because he's the one delivering a lot of it and that kind of stuff. So that was kind of the idea for me.
We're doing house church YouTube right here.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I'm curious because you don't fit the profile of the meaning crisis guy that you know, sort of that there are many of in, you know, in the people who watch my videos. So what about Peterson? And I mean, because there's a lot to Peterson, and some people attach to different aspects of his work. I mean, have you thought about why, you know, how,
yeah,
you know, why you're attracted to this?
Yeah. So for me, a lot of it was, I'm one of those, and I'm sure this is probably a common refrain, at least to some extent, of like, he's saying a lot of things that I've always thought, but he's wording it better than I ever could, or, you know what I mean? Or he's crystallizing it for me in ways that I never really could articulate, or, you know, or I, you know, just never really quite put it together, you know, that way or something. So, plus I actually am interested in psychology too. I mean, I've watched all of the Maps of Meaning. I watched all of the Personality from whatever spring I started listening to them, 2017 or something. So I went through both of those courses all the way on YouTube. So the psychology part of it was really interesting to me too. So another, you know, kind of angle for me is one of the things that I'm really passionate about, is just helping people and making people better around me. And I want to lead. So part of the reason I became a teacher in the first place was, you know, that's kind of was my angle. Turns out I was not very good at it, and not so much the classroom part of it, but kind of the politics and the parents and the administration. And I didn't have the aptitude to the competency in that realm yet.
There are a lot of teachers who quit, not because of the kids, but because of the parents. I'm married to a teacher.
I
was always the parents.
Yep. So, you know, and if I were to go back today, I probably could do better. But I mean, I was 22 years old. I was right out of college. Yep. I wasn't very organized. Yep. I wasn't, you know, very accountable. I just really cocky, which doesn't go over well with parents who are upset with you. So just, you know, just in general, I wasn't necessarily the best for that, but you know, I was teaching math and my degree is in math. So I moved into like business thinking, you know, hey, I can leverage this. But I still, I mean, I get so, I don't know what the word is. I get bored. Maybe I don't have a lot of motivation for just solving math problems or just, you know, doing data, even though that's what I spend a lot of my time on. I want to be with people. I want to be investing in them and making them better. And I'm in a position, which I like now, where I can, you know, help people understand how data makes them better, how improving processes in their day-to-day makes them better. And it all kind of fits together too. You know, I look at Jordan Peterson, and then I'll just, you know, just other concepts. Like one thing is like within business, there's Six Sigma. I don't know if you're very familiar with business process stuff. Toyota is a company that had their whole kind of business process that kind of took off all over the world, but it's all around manufacturing and having appropriate benchmarks and holding people accountable along the way. And so much of the very principles of how do you make an organization successful? Well, you basically, it's a fractal. You basically scale up what makes an individual successful. You define a goal, you set an aim, you move towards it, you measure your performance against that goal. which, and I actually just had a conversation recently with one of my brothers about the appropriate way to set a standard, because my argument was that the standard is perfection. And he pretty quickly recognized that, because he's not a believer. And so he pretty quickly recognized that it's a very Christian belief that, like, yeah, well, because my standard is Jesus. And if that's how I measure my life, then in business, so you operate the same way. You define the standard. You say this is what it would be if everything was perfect all the time. So now every attempt we get at, whether it's making a widget or, you know, deliver whatever process you're doing, how many times are you getting closer and closer to that perfection? That's all we want to do. And that's how you make an organization better. And so to me, it's just interesting how all these things connect. One of the other things, you know, I want to lead people. Obviously, the fact that I want to make them better, I don't want to, you know, just sit in a seat and hope that people around me get better, but actually be in a position of management. And I'm not there yet, but I've, you know, tried to, you know, educate myself around what makes a good leader. And there's a guy, Simon Sinek. I don't know if you've ever heard that name before. He's kind of a leadership expert.
How do you spell his last name?
S-I-N-E-K. So okay. He wrote a book called Start With Why. And then he wrote a follow-up book to that called Leaders Eat Last. And then I think he wrote a book, I think it was called Better Together. And then his latest book is called The Infinite Game. So he's got a consulting company and works with businesses around leadership and how to lead. And so Start With Why. If you were to like Google Simon Sinek, he gave a TED talk probably 10 years ago now, one of the most popular TED talks ever, that was all about kind of defining your why, which is kind of define your purpose. You know, why do you exist as an organization or whatever, which again, same is true on an individual level. Why do we exist? What are we trying to accomplish every day? And then it's so interesting because I follow, you know, I haven't read all the books. I read Leaders Eat Last, which I guess was the second one of his. But so it started with define your purpose. And then it was, you know, leaders eat last, meaning if you're in a position of leadership, your number one thing is to take care of the people who are under your care. And as long as you're taking care of them and they're doing what they need to do, you're going to hit your goals. You're going to be, you know, don't feel like you're accountable to the people above you. Make yourself accountable to the people below you and get them to perform. And then it was Better Together, which was all about, you know, working together in community. And then the most recent one is The Infinite Game. And I've seen a lot of kind of talks he's given on, it's a mathematical concept, finite games versus infinite games, and finite games kind of have a start and an end, you know, like a baseball game or something. And infinite games don't ever end. They're just constant iterations. And so sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind, but you have to have a perspective, which I would say that's just an eternal perspective from a Christian theological point of view. I'm watching all these things. And I kind of diagnosed this way back when I first heard about him, which I think was around when Leaders Eat Last came out. And I'm like, this guy's just telling people to lead like Christ. And he doesn't even know it. I don't even think he's a Christian.
Yeah.
And I've told people this forever. I'm like, everything he's saying, it's just Jesus. Like, that's all he's doing is saying, just lead like Jesus. Define your aim, you know, leaders eat last, better together, an infinite game. He's just taking Christian principles and making them, you know, secular, not even knowing he's doing it. He's pursuing them in a different way. So to me, it's, you know, so I hear Peterson, it's kind of the same thing in a lot of ways. When I first started listening to him, it was a lot of the same kind of, like, he's talking about all these principles of psychology and you know, what works and what doesn't. And, you know, he's always good at throwing out all those statistics and, you know, and you hear all the statistics about, you know, what's better for a child, you know, whether to have, you know, two parents versus one, or whether it's better to wait until you're married to have sex, or, you know, all these things. And I'm like, yeah, I've been hearing this since, you know, this was Sunday school in, you know, third grade or something. Like, this isn't revolutionary as a concept. It's revolutionary the way you're contextualizing it, at least for me. But the idea of doing these things and you'll be successful, that's not new, you know? So for me, it was all kind of like, okay, it's basically, you know, about four or five new angles to the same truth that I've kind of always believed, you know, but it's helped equip me to have better conversations with people. It's helped me to, you know, I developed the place that I work now, I've only been for about 6 months. And obviously the last two of those have been stuck at home. So I don't have a ton of deep relationships there, but where I had been before, I was there for like 6 years. And, you know, in that 6 years, I became introduced to Simon Sinek and Jordan Peterson, and I started to get better and better at being able to, you know, help talk to people and have these conversations. And, you know, I have been much less, you know, hesitant to bring up Jesus. And, you know, it was always one of those things when you're like in youth group and it's always like, hey, talk to people about Jesus. And you're like, they don't want to talk to me about Jesus. If I talk about Jesus, they don't want to talk to me at all. So, you know, I'm just going to do my thing. But the older I get and the more confident I am in the way these things connect, I mean, it's so easy to have a conversation with somebody at work about the importance of setting a standard and to see how that connects. To me, it's not even like, I don't even try anymore. I just have the conversation with them about, you know, this works or that works or whatever. And I go, you know, that reminds me, you know what I mean? I can't even help it anymore because it's just the way that I view it now. Because I'm so much more kind of confident and I think well educated about how these things fit together. And I don't know. I know I'm rambling, but
no, it's good ramble.
I don't know if you heard, you know, like there's all over the news yesterday, the lead singer of some Christian punk band or whatever said he's no longer a Christian. Or he doesn't believe in God anymore or whatever. And some of the things, I mean, he posted a whole thing on Instagram and it was, you know, listing the things that he doesn't, that he can't make sense of anymore, human suffering and you know, why does God kill people in the Old Testament? And I'm like, these are so basic, you know? These are such, you know, these things have been tackled for so long, but we're just not, it's just not in the way we talk anymore or in our understanding of Christianity anymore. And so that's partly why, you know, going all the way back to why I pushed back against some of the mega church stuff and everything else. I've never struggled with the faith itself. I've just always struggled with the way certain people apply it and the way I hate the whole church as a business, as an industry, as the, you know, the pastors, the CEO, and, you know, I can't stand, that's another reason why I was kind of drawn to you when I have heard you talk about, your church and, you know, how you think as a pastor and what you try to do. I'm like, this is what a pastor should be. But so much of the pastors I've grown up with and been around and see on TV or YouTube are not that it was such a welcome, you know, change of pace and different perspective that actually, you know, fits more with what I believe about church, despite the fact that I would say we probably don't agree on a lot of, you know, theological details. To me, just getting the concept of how you should do church right kind of trumps all of that. Like, I don't care how much you agree with every finite point that I agree with, if you think that this is how a church should function, because you broke the whole thing now, you know? I don't know where I was kind of going with that thread, but that was just another.
Well, that's very interesting because on one hand, you very deftly, and I think accurately are able to understand how this business guy and Jesus fit in. And at the same time, you look at what it first happened in the 90s when some church, I was talking to some church, they were kind of interested in hiring me. And I was still a missionary in the Dominican Republic then. And the guy who was doing kind of the search team says to me, something to the effect of, well, don't you think a church should be run like a business? And that was the first time I had ever heard that idea, because I'd been in church all my life. Church was in some ways a family business because of my ancestry of pastoring, but I had always seen church and business as very different. Now, my thinking today is obviously more nuanced, but because business wants to make money and church wants to do something else here. But I think it's very interesting that on one hand, you can very much see how they fit together. And on the other hand, you can also critique how this one application of running church like a business. And you're right. I mean, when I see pastors acting like tribal mercenaries, it just makes me cringe because you're supposed to love people. And there's something in that model that is all about using. I mean, it's just like my good friend said to me when I first moved to Sacramento and he saw me playing with my oldest son in the front yard and said, "Oh, does your boy want to play soccer?" I thought, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't even know what soccer is. Sure, he wants to play soccer.
Yeah.
So I got to know him, and then he learned I was a pastor. And he says, "Oh, pastors are kingdom builders. They build their own kingdoms." And, and you know, that just right. kind of laid it out that pastors, yeah. and of course, he grew up he's African-American, grew up in black churches. And so, you know, he's been a member of my church for a long time. He always can't stand the music. And the funniest thing about him, though, is that the thing that he's sometimes most critical on me is, "Pastor, you never sell the church. You got to sell the church harder." And it's right. like, dude, that's exactly your problem with pastors. And you ought right. to need to be like that. And the only reason you go to church, this church, is because you aren't like that. And because right. your wife couldn't stand it if I was. But so anyway.
Well, it's an interesting thing, because I mean, we're all that way, right? I mean, we all are just total cognitive dissonance in certain areas. And I think, and it, you know, a lot of it becomes about this cult of personality, you know, kind of thing. And I think it's easy to, and this is what I always argue with my, you know, Republican family and friends, like, you want, you know, small government until Trump gets elected, then you're okay with him doing everything. And it's like, he's still a human and he's still flawed like the rest of us. And I think, I mean, in a way, I think it's a compliment to you. Your friend wants, you know, would be okay with you doing it because he trusts you.
That's right.
He doesn't believe it across the board. As that's a principle, right. it's wrong, but for you, it's okay because right. you're Paul and you wouldn't right. abuse
I'm
it,
against tyranny, but if you're the tyrant, okay.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. And it's a common debate. I mean, that it's funny because, you know, I'm generally very conservative in general. Well, conservative. I'm closer.
What do those labels mean?
Yeah. I mean, really, I'm probably closer to anarchy than anything. I just don't like human authorities because they're all flawed and they're all yeah. messed up. And that's why I like the more central. I mean, that's why I like house church. That's why I like smaller communities and more centralized decision making, or localized decision making, I should say. And so, but yeah, I mean, you know, all the Republicans in my family can't stand me because I'm not in love with Trump. And then all of the more left wing people in my family can't stand me because I defend Trump against their more ridiculous accusations, in my opinion. So I'm always like, I just, you know, you can't win, which is fine with me because the debate itself is what I enjoy the most. So
yeah,
that's kind of a family pastime for us anyway. So, but yeah, I was going to tell you another story as well. So we do this house church thing. And then on Sunday mornings, you know, we've got the four little girls and they don't do really anything during house church
right,
time. So,
right.
so we kind of are just like, well, we'll just take them to church on Sunday morning. And I'm pretty much, you know, I think there's part of my wife that would like to get into a community on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like in this case, for this reason, I'm yeah. just the audience. Like, I'm just going to yeah. go, yeah. I'll take in whatever they're selling.
Yeah.
I'll go to a big church so I yeah. can be lost in the crowd. I don't yeah. want to start getting flyers and emails from you. Yeah. I have a community that I consider my church, but yeah. I want my kids to be around other kids in the classroom, learning this, you know, learning yeah. the stories. And they go to a babysitter that's a friend of a family who, you know, teaches them Bible stories and stuff all the time anyway. But just, you know, so that they can kind of get in that rhythm and appreciate it and understand, you know, what church is. So we went to this church, a local church here in Cincinnati that is like, it's like the fastest growing church in America. That's like a part of their marketing
yeah.
is that they grow quickly. And it's, you know, all these different sites and stuff and, you know, big production. They got like yeah. a huge warehouse and stuff. And so we kind of go around to different ones, but we were at this one on this particular Sunday morning, and the sermons are just ridiculous sometimes. I mean, I'm just like, what in the world are you guys talking about? we went to this one, and this guy's talking about how it's important to play. So they were doing this whole series, play and purpose or some crap like that. And so this particular one was like, what, you know, we'll talk about why you need a purpose later. We'll talk about how you can play today. And of course, you know, they contort all kinds of, well, the Sabbath is like playing. It's like, no, it's not, but that's fine for now. Cause you know, I'll do my church tonight. So say whatever you want. I don't care. That's kind of how I approach the Sunday morning thing. But anyway, so we're leaving, we're in the car and we're heading home. And, you know, we ask the girls, hey, what'd you guys learn about? And of course it's always, you know, we learned about Noah or Jonah or Daniel in the lion's den or whatever. And one of my daughters, one of my twins says, we learned that if you play, that makes you like Jesus. And we were like, nope. So we haven't been back to that church since. So we go home, and when I'm like, that's not right, we'll correct that. So we get home, and I sit them down. Like I said, there's four of them, but one of them's a baby. So the older three that actually can comprehend, I sat them down, and I said, look, playing doesn't make you like Jesus. Did Jesus play? Probably. He was human. But that's not – what makes you like Jesus is sacrifice, is loving other people. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, she was 5, I guess, at the time, maybe just turned 6. She had been watching this show, Merlin. It's on Netflix with my wife. And, I mean, it's like, you know, who is it? Sir Lancelot and the knights and stuff, you know. I think it's a British show. I don't get into that kind of stuff, but my wife was watching it, and so my daughter had seen some of it. So I sat them down, and I say, you know, if you want to be like Jesus, being like Jesus is about sacrifice. That was Jesus's mission. That was his purpose, and that's what we're trying to, you know, recreate or whatever, or model. And my daughter goes, what's sacrifice? Or, you know, they're little kids. And I'm like, sacrifice is when you give up something of your own to help somebody else, or, you know, take a risk that could hurt you for the sake of bettering somebody else. And my daughter says, oh, like the knight on Merlin, or, you know, I'm like, I don't know what she's talking about. My wife's like, she's talking about Lancelot. And so my daughter is like, yeah, at the end when they were going to get attacked and he let them kill him instead to save everybody else. And I was like, yes, exactly like that. And I literally thought to myself, if it hadn't been for Jordan Peterson and Jonathan Peugeot and yourself, I would have never, like, that whole thing would have just kind of flown by me. But I mean, it was like in a flood, she says this, and I'm like, yes, like this. And so I told her, I said, Caitlin, this is why that is a good story. This is why people like it. This is why he's a hero. We celebrate people because they sacrifice, and we celebrate people for sacrificing because that's what Jesus did. And we have this in us as human beings that we appreciate the sacrifice of the good for the sake of the people who may not have deserved it. And that is Jesus. And not about playing. That doesn't make you Jesus. That's it. And I'm like, you know, out of the mouth of a 5 or 6 year old, like, she grasped this thing that this whole huge church with the whole marketing team and everything else totally misses the point. And she nails it with this comparison to this random British show that she's caught a couple episodes off with her mom, you know? That to me is like, that is the epitome. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, everybody thinks that stories of their kids are the best, but to me, and obviously, you know, that's kind of me bragging as a dad too, but that to me is like, that's how I want to be. Those kind of conversations are what I, not just with my kids, but with everybody. That's how we see the world, and that's how we communicate that truth. And people are being communicated that truth without even knowing it, whether it's from a movie or from, you know, a psychologist or from a leadership expert. The people who are getting it right are all saying the same thing. And I've heard you say the same thing about, you know, Eric Weinstein, and, you know, they'll talk about the virtues of marriage and childbearing and everything else, and then never tie it to the basis for why that's true, you know? Anyway, that was just a little story that I thought you'd
appreciate. That's a great story. And it's so true. I mean, to me, I mean, you haven't watched today's video, but I mean, so part of what I do in that video is I basically say, you know, you have this scientific image. And so the Boxing Day tsunami has the, you know, Brett contrasts the kind of traditional cultural method where this whole tribe, none of them die from the tsunami because they believe that when the waters receded, the spirits were angry and so on and so forth, and they all lived. And then this modern secular view, which says, well, there's these tectonic plates and this happens and there are early warning systems. And well, one of these systems is a lot more fragile than the other. And that there are deep truths that get embedded into things that we don't see or appreciate, but they are coming in under the radar and they are forming us, some of them for good, some of them for ill, obviously. But your story is a perfect illustration of, you could sit there. So often we sit there and we talk to 5-year-olds as adults, but if you tell a story, they get it right away. And it's like, well, if you work in data and technology, it's like, well, you know, you can just keep you know, you can just keep pounding that Android app at your Windows software and it will never install. It just won't. But that's because it's got to fit, and there's a fit there that, you know, Jordan Peterson, there's a fit there that is durable and lasting. And yeah, kids will learn it. And and then as we grow up.
I was just going to say, it's great, you know, when you're talking about, you know, something so simple, and then, you know, you watch Jonathan Peugeot, like, destroy Moana, you know, and then your kids want to watch that, and you're like, no, I know what this is. I saw that. You know, there's like this thing with my wife. Yeah. It's like, well, it's great when I'm teaching them about Jesus, but not when I'm taking away their favorite cartoon character. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly there's right.
Always, there's always the downside to it.
And you know, and so, you know, now at my age, so it's interesting because I've seen a lot of families navigate this, you know, Christian conservative families and other families that are more permissive and some traditions that are more restrictive and others. And the truth is, you won't protect her from, you know, bad content later on, because when she's a young adult or, you know, picking her own stuff, she'll go back and watch it. But you do have an opportunity now in terms of the early formation period, so that even, you know, in many ways, many kids have their rumspringa where they, you know, where they will go out into the world. But there's a lot of truth to the fact that if you train the child up in the way that she should go, well, you know, oftentimes they'll learn something. And even when they take a long journey out to the far off country and wind up slopping pigs, something in the back of their mind about, you know, my papa and this boss, they were not the same.
Yeah.
My papa loved the people that he was caring for, and he sacrificed on behalf of the community. And this guy feeds me so poorly, I'm looking at the slop and, you know, starting to want it. And even if the prodigal son has, you know, the words of Egypt on his lips when he's dialoguing to himself, the truth of the father endures, because who doesn't want to see the leader care for the flock? Who doesn't understand that the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep? And the truth is, and Tom Holland is right in this, you know, once Christianity really put that out into the world, folks recognize it and they're going to be drawn to it.
Yeah. And that, you know, I don't prevent them from watching it. You know, they can watch Moana, whatever. It's just, they're going to hear me relentlessly trash it in the room the whole time. That's kind of the compromise. So either I have to leave the room or they're just going to have to deal with it. And the funny thing is, my kids don't really, I mean, it's dad. They, you know, they're used to
that's
that.
Right, that's right.
It's my wife that gets annoyed.
Right,
she's interested in it. And they're like, yeah, well, dad's being dad. And, you know, sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. But
yeah. But so I don't want to take all your time talking about my question. So we got another 15 minutes yet. So I don't know if you had an agenda.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, there's something that that I kind of wanted to run by you, I guess, so to speak.
Okay.
Just kind of hear your thoughts on, because this is something, and I like I said, I brought it up to the guys within my little house church, but never really beyond that. And I'm just curious, you know, this is how kind of things fit together for me. And it's interesting because, you know, between the time that I signed up to talk to you and today, you put out another video on homosexuality and your interview with Jonathan Peugeot, which are two of the things that I was like, those are two of, you know, my kind of things I was the most interested in. I don't even know how to kind of introduce it, because I feel like it's a little bit of a strange perspective potentially, but basically I think about God, and, you know, God is love. And I think, you know, when you think about the Trinity and the different aspects of the Father, and I mean, I know it's the Son, but in terms of his relationship to us, he's the groom. And then the Holy Spirit, the kind of one that comes beside us and helps hold us accountable and convict us. is I really think that those are basically different types of love, that you could basically boil down the relationships that involve love as humans to those three things. So there's romantic marital love, the spousal love. So that's Jesus and the church. And so we see that God has a role in showing us what that love looks like. And then there is the parent-child love that exists, you know, between us as humans, but then God is the father and we as the children. So there's a love there. And then, so the one that was always kind of the missing puzzle piece for me was this idea of the Holy Spirit. And I'm like, I guess that's like your neighbor, you know, that's like a person, you know, in your community or something that you love. And I was actually talking to my brother about this and he said, or a sibling. And I thought, that's it. It's a sibling, because it's that core unit is the family itself. And that's why your homosexuality thing was so interesting to me, especially you covered the whole, you know, marriage history in the Old Testament. And to me, so much of, you know, marriage and the family and the significance of marriage and the family and the relationships between, you know, us as parents and our kids and us with our spouses, and then also us as siblings with each other, is we're learning how to love. You learn how to love your sibling first. Those are the ones you grow up with and you have to fight with, and you respect your parents and you learn that love as well. But then the older you get, you learn romantic love. And then, you know, once you've understood that, you know, at least well enough to have a marriage, that is, then you have kids and now you're on the other side of that, you know, that kind of love. And then that love for your siblings expands out beyond your family. And one of the things my grandma used to say to us when we were kids, she used to babysit us in the summer times when both of my parents worked and all of us kids were at home. And I'm one of four. And between my brother, who's the oldest, and my sister, who's the youngest, there's only 5 years. So we're all pretty close together. And so whenever we wanted to have a friend over to play, my grandma would always say, if we were fighting with each other, we couldn't have a friend over. So if me and my brother were in the midst of not getting along, and I said, hey, can I have my friend over? She said, how are you going to get along with him if you can't get along with your own brother? And I didn't realize how significant that was until I got older and told people that that's what my grandma used to say to us. And they were like, wow, like we were never told that. I think that's part of why I make that connection, because I was taught that getting along with your siblings first, because that's your family and there's a significance to that. And so, so to me, you know, so many things kind of flow from this idea. You know, you've got this idea of the family. Well, then when you start talking about homosexuality, it's like, well, that structure can't exist. Anything that breaks that structure then is a problem. And so, and it's also, you know, the whole homosexuality thing is interesting. And we've talked about that within our house church group as well, because not everybody all agrees on what's what in that perspective. But, you know, one of the things that I've said that, you know, really messes up the whole narrative and how we even get to the conversation of talking about this homosexuality thing as marriage is that we think that marriage is all about, you know, this romantic sexual attraction, but it's not. It's about being the base unit for this family that now you're having kids and you're contributing to society as a family, and that's the optimal way. And I think, you know, I know I've heard you, you know, talk about the misuse of family, you know, like the Family Research Council or Focus on the Family or some of these ways where they kind of, you know, I don't know what the right word for it is, proselytize, you know, turn it into their own kind of thing for their own benefit.
You can turn almost every good thing you can turn into an idol if you make it ultimate.
Right.
And so, if it's right, which is why God alone is ultimate and everything else has its place. And then everything else actually functions. It's very Peugeotian of me, but that's that's a very old, very common belief.
Yeah. But it's a reflection of him. And so the family, it's so, you know, I think about, you know, like in chemistry, you know, everything's made up of atoms, you know, but atoms are made up of smaller things too, but they don't really function as anything until they're atoms. And that's how I feel about the family unit within the society. The society doesn't function as a bunch of individuals. And that's one of the things, another one of the kind of things that has really pulled me a little bit away from the kind of traditional conservative or neoconservative perspective, is I am not all in on individualism. I am, you know, 95% in on individualism. But the other 5%, you're an individual that comes from somewhere. You're a part of something, not just an individual. And we can't just build a society around the idea that every individual functions completely autonomously. Yep. The ideal format or structure would be that the family functions autonomously, and that the individuals learn their place within that family, and that also helps them learn their place within the society, because they're learning how to love in this way, and God is reflected in that. And I didn't tell you before, but excuse me, in our little house church, we kind of take turns teaching and just kind of being the one who goes and studies the text in a little bit deeper and then shares with the group what they found, and then we have a discussion about it. And so we were just going through, we're still in the middle of going through the book of John, and we're moving very slowly because we're taking, you know, bit by bit. And I was following your Sunday school. Yeah. The Gospel of John. So I was following your Sunday school lessons where you were going through John. And there's also a really good video that I don't know if you're familiar with Tim Mackey. He's one of the Bible Project guys. Yeah, I know you've talked about Bible Project before. So there's like a 3-part video that he was giving a talk at some conference or something on the Gospel of John. Uh-huh. So between his, I think each video is like an hour and a half. And so between that and your teaching, and you were, for a while there, you were like right ahead of me. So I was constantly like, okay, what did Paul say? And then,
and then COVID hit. You're on your own, baby.
Right. Yeah. You really messed me up. But the woman at the well, is really interesting because we got into a lot of that idea of when Jesus is calling her out on the divorces, what is he calling her out on? I mean, there's always the, is he just saying she's a slut, or is she a victim because she's a woman at this time and she can't really choose a divorce? And I think all of those things are true, but also I think that what she's breaking when she breaks that divorce is the fundamental first step to, the family itself that is the reflection of God and his love. And so for me, everything kind of comes back to that. And you see, that's what happens at creation. That's what God creates. And, which is also interesting. And you could go down that whole rabbit hole of all of the, kind of symbolism and things there of the first love they break is with their father. And then the next kind of big one is a brother kills his own brother, and so all of these things kind of play out in the story as well. And then you get into all the marriage stuff that you covered in your homosexuality video. So all three of those kind of loves are right there as the fundamental pieces that this is what broke the society. First, we stopped respecting our parents. Then we stopped loving our brother. And then we didn't even know how to treat
ourselves. Well, and Adam throws Eve under the bus right at the start.
Right, right.
The woman that you gave me. I mean, he blames them both in one sentence. It's like, bang. It's like, oh, Adam. Yeah, boom. You just blew the whole thing apart, didn't you, buddy? You're really all alone now. I love that. I think that's really cool. I've never, and it's funny because when someone presents something like this to you, it's like, oh gosh, that's so obvious. But why didn't I ever kind of put that together like that? I'm going to rip that off.
I'm glad you think it's obvious and you should, because I didn't know if I was going to say it and you were going to be like, that is ridiculous. I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like you have this kind of thing that sprouts in your brain and starts to kind of, and then everything seems like it fits. And it's like, am I making this fit because it's just what I want to be true? Or is there something under this that really is,
No, the Trinity maps onto all sorts of other things. And, that could be a whole nother conversation. But have you read C.S. Lewis's The Four Loves?
I have not.
Okay. If you're into audiobooks, there's actually an audiobook of Lewis himself reading it, which is really cool. But he's a little hard to understand for us Americans, but it's your analysis reminded me of the book. And so that might be a fun book for you to take a look at because Lewis gets into the fact that these different, sibling loves, phileo in Greek, this brotherly love, and of course, Philadelphia, city of brotherly love,
right.
Parental love, the love of a parent, which is an asymmetric love in some ways. They come together, but it's parental love is a love between people who are not equals. So siblings are sort of equal. Parent-child love is a love between non-equals, Right. And then, of course, romantic love is a bonding right. where the two become one. And so, of course, Lewis and Lewis will go through these. And of course, he was he was a master of the classics. And so, you know, he was well read in this. And so you might really enjoy that. But I love the way you laid it out there. And I really also love how you talked about that atoms have things beneath them, but they don't function as anything until they're atoms. And I never really thought of it that way, but it's true, because of atoms that then of course become molecules and
right.
but different kinds of atoms come together, whereas at the limits of what I understand about, you know, about quantum physics, the subparticles don't work in the same way together as atoms work in the same way together.
Right.
So that's a really cool analogy too. So no, that's really cool.
And I threw the term fractal out there earlier, and that's really how I think. I mean, everything, it's the same thing in the smallest form, and then it builds up, right? But but that's kind of how I came to the idea of the chemistry thing, is it doesn't get any smaller, but it does. You know, it does and it doesn't at the same time,
yes.
and that's
yes.
kind of what you get with the atom. And I use the example a lot, and like I said, you know, so many of these things tie into business and everything else, and I use the example a lot when I'm talking about business, about, you know, just like a body, an organism that, you know, you got cells, and the cells have to work together, and they make up a tissue, and then the tissues work together and make up an organ, and then an organ system, and then the organism. And even if one cell is not working correctly, then your whole organism could be off, you know? Yep. And so everybody has to play their specific role. But then it goes up forever until you're at God, you know?
Yep.
And that's definitely something that I, you know, came to an understanding of through Jordan Peterson and his whole idea of kind of the, you know, this tribe has this God and this tribe has that God, and they, you know, the best of the two come together and make their understanding of God.
Yep.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's always building up. And so you work within, you know, your small thing. And you know, again, I have said lots of times, I'm not a fan of centralized power, but that's kind of what it is because nobody at that level can see all of that. You can only
right.
function within the realm that you can see. And you just make the most. I saw, I think it was on, I think it's called Firing Line, PBS show. It used to be William F. Buckley back in
right.
the day, and now I think it's Margaret Hoover. And she had Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he made a comment about, you know, she was asking him, why should we fund science, you know, at a government level? Why should the government pay for scientific exploration or research or whatever? And he used some analogy about, like, you know, don't, you know, you wouldn't, if you're in a cave and there's a whole world out there to explore, you don't say, wait, we can't go explore the world until we fix what we got going on inside this cave. And I go, absolutely you do. What are you talking about? You don't abandon the problems here to go explore the world. Of course you fix that. And then all of you can go together and be more successful at exploring the world. And of course I'm an advocate of exploring the world. I mean, that, you know, I don't know how you can appreciate Jordan Peterson and not have an appreciation for the idea of adventure and slaying your dragons and the whole thing, but you don't do it on your own. That's the whole point. It's about the community. You know, it's like you listen to the beginning of Jordan Peterson, go confront your dragon and get the gold, but it's like, then you bring it back and share it with the community. Well, if the community's broken because you abandoned it when it needed you most, well, then what's the point, you know? And I just thought, what a stupid analogy. And he was so like confident that, like, see, that proves we have to do this. I'm like, I think it proves the exact opposite. Like, fix our problems first, you know, get your house in order before you criticize the world, which I know is one of the rules. They slip out so easily once you use them.
Yeah. So it's
much.
True.
Anyway.
It's true. It's true.
Anyway, I think
we're out of time. I've got another one after you, but this has been a delight. And what I will do is I'm going to post this to YouTube unlisted. And so you can watch it and you can share it. And then if you decide that you'd like it, you know, more broadly available, let me know and I can always unlist it. So.
Okay. I mean, I can tell you now, if you want to put it up, go ahead. I mean, I'm not particular about it. I actually, what we've been doing in our little house church, you know, like I said, one person kind of does the study and then we all talk about it. I usually post videos on YouTube just of my little study part to the group and everybody watches it. And then we meet. That way we don't have to waste time in our meeting with somebody teaching. It's just watch it ahead of time. We'll get together and then we'll talk about it when we get there. So
that's a great strategy.
It's working so far. So
that's a really good strategy.
I stole it from the church that I told you we started as part of a church. That's what they did. Sunday morning was a sermon. And then Wednesday night, we'd talk about what was preached. And I just thought, this is such a better use of time, you know? So that's how I've been operating. So my face is already out there, and I'm, yeah, I don't mind having it on
okay,
your channel as
cool.
well.
Okay, so. Cool. Well, wonderful. Well, oh, this has been great, Brad. So thank you
Likewise.
So much for signing up for a slot.
Of course. Thanks for making yourself available. I really appreciate it.
So I wish I didn't have to go, because I get the sense we could talk a lot longer, but.
I'm sure. I'll try to sign up again if I can find another opening.
Okay, real good. You take
care. All right,
care.
Thanks, Paul. You too.